This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you by the International Brotherhood of Magicians Annual Convention, which will be in Tacoma, Washington, coming up this July the 10th through the 13th. It's not too late for you to register. Now is a good time to go over to IBMconvention.com and check out all the people who are going to be there and all the festivities, everything. The schedule's all there, and you can register for the convention, too. So go check it out. For more information, we're going to have just a brief conversation with somebody here. It'll be kind of a surprise for you here shortly within the middle of this podcast. But if you want more detailed information, I suggest you go to the convention guide, the Magic Convention Guide on the MagicWordPodcast.com. There will be a audio that you can listen to that is a little bit longer, about 10 or 12 minutes, and gives you a lot more details about the upcoming convention. For that matter, if you want to know about any other conventions and when they're going to be and links to their website, again, that's the place to go for all things having to do with magic conventions at the magicwordpodcast.com. Just click on that tab that says magic conventions. If yours is not listed, please let me know. Just send me an email to scott@themagicwordpodcast.com. I'll be glad to give you a free listing. If you want something more than you'd like to sponsor your convention on the podcast, then let me know and I can send you some ad rates so that way you know about that then as well. So again, something for you to look forward to in the upcoming weeks. This is going to be a pretty busy summer. A lot of other magic conventions coming up over the next several months then as well. So this is the first of the major ones that is coming up soon. I say first one, that's not right for this year. Obviously, we got kicked off with Magi Fest in Columbus, and it's gone on from there. But anyhow, that's what's going on then right now this week. Also, we are going to be having some magician who is more than just some magician. He is somebody. This guy, Benjamin Barnes, is from Chicago, Illinois. He used to book for the talent for Magic Chicago. And then over the last couple of years or more, he's been working for Chicago Magic Lounge and booking the talent there. He is talented himself because he has been performing all over. He's been at the Magic Castle a dozen times. He's been on Masters of Illusion television show, on Penn & Teller Fool Us. He's been on a variety of news talk shows in the Chicago area. We're going to talk about that all and more. Plus, if you're interested in finding out how you can get booked to work at the Chicago Magic Lounge, or if you want to know what it takes to get booked there, or even if you don't, it will be kind of interesting for you to learn how a entertainment director or director of entertainment actually thinks about booking talent and what it is that he is looking or she is looking for when it comes to talent and working at some of these venues. This is an excellent podcast episode that I know you'll enjoy. It is informative, and I just loved having a chance to sit down finally with my good friend Ben, and I think you will enjoy hearing from him as well. If he is not a friend of yours, I'm sure he will be after this episode. So please welcome my guest this week, Mr. Benjamin Barnes, here on The Magic Word. Today we're going to Chicago, Illinois, the Windy City, and that's where it is, the home of the Chicago Magic Lounge. If you guys haven't had a chance to go to the Magic Lounge, I highly recommend it. It's one of the superior places on Lake Superior. in that area, in fact, but certainly superior places in the United States, if not the world. It's a premier place for going and seeing magic. And prior to that, actually, the gentleman that I'm speaking with here today had worked with a thing called Magic Chicago, I think it was, or in which
it was.
He was the entertainment director for that. And so he has for a long time kind of known enough people and been in the right places to help book everything. And not only that, this gentleman has been on Masters of Illusion television show on the CW. I believe if you've been on Penn & Teller Fool Us.
Yeah, the last three seasons.
I was going to say, I thought perhaps for Penn & Teller Fool Us.
Yeah.
So I want to introduce my friend and yours. Here he is, Benjamin Barnes. Hey there, Ben. How are you, man?
Hello. I am great. I'm doing really great. Busy, but great.
I'll bet you are. I mean, it seems, I know as an entertainment director, you are always busy because people are contacting you all the time, day and night, with emails and texts and phone calls and saying, hey, I would like to come and work and get up there. I'm sure you being bothered by a lot of people. I mean, you kind of got some ideas, but that's one of the things I want to, we might as well get right into that right away. How do you handle all that?
You try to handle it with good humor.
Diplomacy.
Yeah, diplomacy. yeah, that's really how you try to handle it. Because the reality is, places that need magicians to work, we need people who want to come, you know, who sure. want to perform here. So you have to appreciate people when they reach out. Not everyone is going to be a good fit for any given venue, certainly not the Magic Lounge, but you do want people to continue to feel comfortable expressing an interest in performing. So I handle it with, like you said, diplomacy. Yeah, I try to handle it with diplomacy.
Yeah, I know when I was the temporary entertainment director for the Magic Island, and it is not yet open, although it's still scheduled to be open. They're pretty much, they're guaranteeing that it'll be open by this fall. We shall see. In the meantime, I moved from Houston to the Austin area, and so they re-enlisted to have Scott Hollingsworth to come back down and be the entertainment director, because he was doing it before and did a great job. I know for a while I was the director, I was being contacted by people six times a day, and we weren't even open yet.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to try and tell someone, yeah, you're not the right type of act for this kind of venue.
Yeah.
Or, yes, you're a friend. I like you. It's nothing to do with friendship. It's all business.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. And I've gotten pretty good at that. You know, when it comes to whether, I think you put it perfectly, it's about whether or not someone's good for the venue. I don't make a determination whether or not someone's act is good or not. Mm-hmm. It's purely, is it good for us and our audience?
Yes.
And it's a lot easier to tell someone, you know, thank you for the video, but it's not a good fit for an audience, because it's not a judgment on the quality of their act. So I find that a good way to approach it. And when it comes to, you know, if you ever want to isolate yourself or alienate yourself from the community of magic, take this job on. It's not about friendship. I don't have very many friends. You know, back in the old days, you know, I felt like I had like a ton of friends, you know. And now, you know, there's people who literally won't talk to me in some cases because I wasn't able to bring them down. But that has given me a much tougher skin. And so I can handle all of those things a lot better now.
So you've grown really as a person.
Yeah, forcibly.
I know that is difficult to have to say no to some people. And again, as we just said, it has to do with the venue. And it could be, for an example, if they say, well, hey, I worked the Magic Castle, why can't I work there? Or they might have worked at Smoke and Mirrors or whatever. The venue, for an example, the Magic Island, I remember Scott Hollingsworth saying many years ago, and I don't know if this is going to change when he starts booking people now, but he said, we really have more of a country club type of a set of people. And that means that they don't appreciate vulgar humor or rude language or anything. Like in a comedy club, this is not a comedy club. This is a magic venue, basically. So when he's seen some of these acts, they have some harsh language. And so he said, I'm just telling you, that's not appropriate for our audience. And then they might say, well, look, I can clean it up. I can do whatever. Say, well, you need to send me something that would be a lot more squeaky clean or whatever. Yeah. On the other hand, I know from when I have visited the Magic Lounge, it seems that yours is more on the edge, like a comedy club, because I've heard people who use language that I've heard in a comedy club that wouldn't work at the Magic Island. My point in that story is people might come, when I was there, might would say, well, I've worked the Chicago Lounge. Why can't I work the Magic Island? Well, it's a different kind of audience.
Right. Absolutely right. And I take that same stance. You know, each venue has its own character, its own type of audience, and not everybody is a good fit. You know, I'm certainly not a good fit for every venue either. You know, no magician. You know, if you're good for every venue, that means you're probably boring. You know, if you're that safe, I would never want to be good for every venue. That would be a sign that I'm a little bit too pedestrian.
Yeah.
But the Magic Lounge, you are right. It is a little more on that edge. You know, the Magic Lounge was created by people from the comedy world, the improv world. They weren't magicians. So you see that reflected in the acts that we have here. That said, I do try. My goal every night when we open the doors is to give people a sense of the rich tapestry of magic. So, you know, you'll see someone who's a little edgier as a comedian, but then you might also see Tina Leonard, mm-hmm. or you might see Eric Jones. So the idea is, as far as I'm concerned, is we want to let people know that magic is so much more than you thought it is. And it's not just one thing, but it's lots of different styles, lots of different types of people, lots of different ways of performing.
Right. Many flavors and colors of magic, that's for sure.
Yes. Yeah. In our audience, I think the reason it resonates with them is because that's our audience too. Our audience isn't just, you know, we have people ranging from professional athletes to, you know, bartenders and everyone in between, you know, investment, you know, hedge fund managers mm-hmm. and, you know, truck drivers. You know, everybody is in our audience, and there's something for everyone. And truthfully, I want everyone to have a good time, but I'm not trying to create an experience with the people I work with where everyone's just like, I loved everything. I mean, people do. They love the experience of the night, but you do want to challenge people a little bit. You want to walk a little bit close to the edge.
Kind of a tightrope, a little bit. You know, you want to be a little, yeah.
Yeah. You know, when Dan Sperry walks out on the stage, people, you know, they don't know.
Yeah, they might get uncomfortable a little bit just from his looks, yeah.
And you want people to feel uncomfortable. You want them to feel joyous. You want them to feel sweet feelings. You want them to feel all kinds of emotions. At least I do.
Good point.
And I haven't been fired yet, so it must be going okay.
Well, that leads me to another question I was going to ask, because I know from time to time at the Magic Island, when in years past when they were open and Scott Hollingsworth was the entertainment director, that the owner would come to him from time to time and say, I don't like that guy. You need to get rid of him.
Yeah.
And not that he's going to lose his job as being entertainment director. It's just that the owner didn't care for that. Now, I know Joy Cranford owns this. And does he have a lot of say day to day on who comes in or not, or telling you what to do?
Zero. Okay. They completely trust me, which is a dream.
That's great.
Makes my life really easy, or easier. And in the years that we've been open since 2018, that type of interaction where the owners didn't care for someone who has appeared here, that has happened twice.
That's saying a lot to you about your ability to get the right people. Yeah,
that's happened twice. And it happened years ago, shortly after we opened, when I was just sort of figuring out things here. But, you know, we have on average 150 magicians perform on our stage every year,
150
magicians. Mm-hmm. Since 2018, now granted, two of those years we were off because the world had shut down, but we started doing virtual shows the week after the shutdown. We were one of the first people to go into virtual performance. And I've only gotten complaints twice.
And that was from the owners, but have you received any pushback or any feedback negatively from any of the patrons?
Yeah, you know, we pay attention to Yelp and TripAdvisor. We've gotten that, you know, I'd say less than a dozen times. Okay. The Chicago Magic Lounge is the number one nightlife destination in Chicago.
Wow.
Yeah. So, people love us. We're sold out every night. You know, yesterday was Tuesday. Mm-hmm. We were completely sold out. We're sold out tonight. We're sold out just about every night of the week. We're only closed three nights a year. And again, that little bit of a pushback, that doesn't bother me. I think that is a sign that we're not playing it too safe. And also, you're not going to please everybody. You're never going to please everybody. But again, if
people who just like to complain.
Yeah. And people who like to complain are the ones who tend to write the most.
Yeah.
You know, they tend to go, so, and you know how that is.
Yeah.
But no, for the most part, you know, people love us, and our audience is a lay audience. These aren't magicians. And they come back night after night, and most of our advertising is, you know, word of mouth. You know, for the most part, it's word of mouth.
And how many shows per night? Do you do two or three shows a night?
It depends. On Friday and Saturday, we do two shows a night. Mm-hmm. Every other night of the week, we do one.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's what, a 45-minute show with one person, two people, or how many?
Well, it depends. Monday nights, we do a program called Music and Magic. So we have a jazz band, usually a trio or a quartet. They play on stage for about 40 minutes. Then a magician will go on stage and perform for 20. After that 20 minutes performance is over, the band comes back, they play for another 40 minutes, and the magician will wrap up the night with another 5 to 10 minutes. The entire time the band is playing, there's magic at the table. So there's close-up magicians moving around the room. Tuesday, we have what we call the showcase, which is we bill it as an evening of experimental magic. There's an hour of close-up magic at the tables. And then we have two performers go on stage. They take turns. They each do 30 minutes. We say it's experimental. In reality, 80% of that show, they've done many times before. So the audience is going to get a great show. But there might be one to two effects that are newer. And
so it gives the guys an opportunity to try out something new on live public audience.
Yeah, but it's like one routine. It's not the show.
The whole show, of course.
Yeah, no, people got to leave here feeling like that was worth the time.
Right.
Yeah, one to two routines. And then Wednesday, we do the Artist in Residence program, which is one performer on stage for 3 months. And right now we have Andre Shaniska. I'm still learning how to say his name, but you know, the butterfly cards.
Yeah,
that's Andre, and he has 3 more shows, and he's preparing for a show right now. He's actually on stage getting ready. And the show you probably saw was our signature show, where Jan Orleans comes out, and she's the MC. Two acts on stage. We have what we call a close-up show in the back, and then we have close-up magic on the tables prior to all of that. We also have the magic bar, which is free. You don't need a ticket to come into the bar and see magic being performed nightly.
Do some people just go in to see Jeff Bibbick just to have a few drinks?
I mean, after work
and like just hang out and then leave?
There's people who've been coming here for years, never been into the show. The signature show, but they've been at the bar.
Yeah.
And I think that's cool too.
I think that's very cool. I know Jeff has a quite a following.
Oh, yeah. No, he is something else.
Now, one of the things, too, I know that you got the 654 Club, which is right next door or behind the stage and everything there, too. Does that go on simultaneous, or is that something that is separate? As I recall, that is, those are two separate shows and two different ticketed items.
It is a separate show. And part of the reason is this, you know, we fit 107 people in the building. But there would be too much noise bleed to do the shows at the same time. So we can't do them at the same time. But after the program on stage concludes, out of the 107 people who see that, 43 are ushered into the 654 Club, which is where I am presently. And they see what's typically a close-up magic show. You know, that's sort of a misnomer. The close-up gallery at the Magic Castle holds 23 people. Mm-hmm. This room is more than twice the size of that. That said, the angles are such that people can see cards and coins and a traditional close-up magic show with no problem. But a lot of times, people will take the table out and do a parlor show. This room is a lot more like the parlor of prestidigitation at the Magic Castle than it is a traditional close-up room.
Because so it is raked. People can look down.
It is raked. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is raked. Yep. So, yeah.
We were talking just off camera before we started this. Some magicians don't even know what the 554 mean or 654 means.
No, they don't know. And again, you know, Bill Malone made that so popular. You know, it's been one thing if you're 19 or 20 years old. Maybe you don't remember Bill Malone doing that. But everybody else, you know, that was huge. Bill, that was one of Bill's most famous routines.
Yeah.
And
the bellhop.
Yeah. And Bill... Joey used to be a concierge at the Peninsula Hotel in Chicago. And one day when he's doing his job, Bill Malone walked in. Bill was staying at the hotel. Mm-hmm. He was in town doing something. He was performing somewhere. And him and Joy became friends. And Bill was a part of this project long before it opened, while it was under construction. And when you come into the 654 Club, on the wall, there's a frame with all of Bill's business cards from all the Chicago bars and restaurants where he used to work when he was younger.
So it's kind of like Bill's room.
Yeah, and he performed in this room. You want to hear a funny story about Bill performing in this room?
Yeah.
So Bill performed here one time, and he had one rule. No magicians could be in the room. That was his rule. No magicians. So all these magicians come because they want to see Bill Malone.
Yeah.
None could come in the room. So, and the reason he didn't want magicians in the room is he would afraid they wouldn't react the same way.
Sure, as the public.
Yeah. Which is probably true. Mm-hmm. At the back of the room, there's a camera that the technicians can use so they know when to change the lights and turn on the music. We wired that camera to the main cabaret, and there's a screen that dropped down. So we broadcast it to the big room, and that way we could accommodate all the magicians. The room was completely full. Yeah. They saw Bill's full performance. But the audience in the room were a bunch of people who worked at a local sex shop, you know, and they were a great audience, and Bill had a great time with them.
Wait a minute. You say a local sex shop?
Yeah, local sex shop.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, and this, we're in the Andersonville neighborhood. This is, you know, people here have a little bit of money, and so it's not like the trench coat, you know, dark corner type place.
Right, right. But it's rather affluent. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But still. But when the show was over, Bill went out to the cabaret and he stayed for maybe 5 hours talking with people, taking pictures, going over moves, giving advice. He was very generous. But it was cool to see him do Sam the Bellhop in the 654 Club. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand, unfortunately, that Bill has had recently had a heart operation. Apparently he had some problems with his arm because it was in a bad position when they were operating or something, and he's one arm doesn't work, or the hand doesn't work like it did before. Have you seen him recently?
Yeah, I saw Bill at 4F.
Yeah,
and he shared that with me. But you know, but he's at peace with it. You know, Bill,
yeah,
I think every dream he had, he got to realize.
Good point.
And, you know, I think he's done well for himself professionally and personally. Mm-hmm. And now he's doing, or he intends to do seminars on performance.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me a little taste of that when I saw him at 4F.
Oh, nice.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're still going to see Bill a lot. He'll just be doing something different.
When I interviewed or had a conversation with Robin Leach, I wanted to talk with him about what was it like in the earlier days of Las Vegas before magic kind of came in. You know, Siegfried and Roy changed everything. And how did that change? And I was talking with him about that. And I said, and do you have a favorite magician? And without even thinking, he said, yep, Bill Malone. He said, I love that guy. He's my favorite. Sure. He said, I've had him down to my place on the island and we have parties, and he's always the magician I call. I just love that guy.
I believe it. I believe it. You know, for as amazing as Bill is technically, as an entertainer, he's in a class by himself.
Yeah.
You know,
he's in class. He's beyond compare and reproach. That's for sure. Well, I was going to ask you then about the audiences. You touched on that, about how they might be different now at this location versus where you were before. I remember that this was initially a laundromat, and I remember seeing the videos when you guys were going through the whole thing and stripped down to basically the just the concrete floor, working on all of that back several years ago. But prior to that, you were in another place in which you shared, I guess, with a burlesque group back then. You remember?
Yeah, that was the Uptown Underground.
Uptown Underground.
I wasn't really a part of the lounge back then. I was still doing Magic Chicago.
Yeah,
when those guys were there.
Mm-hmm.
And Joey brought me into the Magic Lounge really in the final days of the Uptown Underground. I saw maybe three or four shows there. And then it was over.
Was it just because that was kind of the end of their run at that place that Chicago Magic kind of terminated also? Because, I mean, that was it more successful than Chicago Magic, or what happened?
No. So Magic Chicago started in 2005.
Okay.
And it went to 2013. And it was just time to do something new. It was going to close anyway.
Oh.
The timing just worked out that the Magic Lounge had found an investor, and this person is very much still involved as Joey's partner in the Magic Lounge, and they needed someone who had connections to the larger Magic world outside of Chicago. But no, the Magic Chicago was just going to end. You know, we were working with Bill Cook, who has gone on to do lots of things. He works on cruise ships now.
Cruise ships, yeah.
Yeah, Jeanette Andrews, who was just on the cover of Genie and Dust. She worked with us since she was 15 years old.
Oh.
And it was just time for me to do something different. So I was going to walk away from it.
Where did they do Magic Chicago? Did they have, what kind of a venue was that? Was it similar to?
It was more similar to the old Magic Lounge.
Mm-hmm.
Location, except we were in the theater. The Uptown Underground was this burlesque theater built underneath. You know, it was in the basement of this building.
Mm-hmm.
The stage had been made by the burlesque company. It was beautiful. It was amazing.
Yeah.
There was a big bar in the room, like a long bar in the room. Magic Chicago was always in proper theaters. But we were like usually the smaller theater in the complex. We would sometimes move to a larger theater in the complex depending on the act. You know, if Jeff McBride came to town and he did a show with us, and we knew magicians would come en masse, then we would move to a bigger theater. But we were typically in a smaller black box theater. But it was amazing the people we got to come and perform. It was everybody, you know, Jared Kopp, Rob Zabrecki, John Armstrong, Tina Litterett, Mike Caveney, Arden James, you know, the list just is contemporary American magic was represented in the shows that Magic Chicago presented. And it was amazing.
Did you feel as if that you were in competition with the Chicago Magic Lounge at the time?
No.
There were two separate things?
No. No, and here's the thing. Zero. Yeah. Not only is it two separate things, but depending on the spirit in which something is done, like we were doing our own thing. When you do your own thing, there's never any competition.
Mm-hmm.
No one is doing what you do, and what you do and how you approach it matters. That's what there's more and more magic shows popping up in Chicago.
Really?
And there's a lot of these smaller sort of venues popping up everywhere. I think it's great. You know, when the Magic Castle is doing its job or the Magic Lounge is doing its job, what happens is people want to see more magic and magicians want to perform. All the stuff you've seen with these venues popping up all over the country just means that magic is thriving. And one thing I've discovered being in Chicago, right now there are three venues for magic in Chicago. There's us, the Rhapsody Theater, and the Magic Parlor where Dennis Watkins works.
Oh, yeah.
I talk to our customers every night. They come see us, and then they go see Dennis, and then they go to the Rhapsody. The audience doesn't see themselves as having to choose, where they get to choose everything. You know, we all win. It's fantastic. No,
that's great. Yeah, the fact that you guys work together that way, certainly, and they are all different kinds of things because Rhapsody, again, features one person who is, again, kind of in residence, I guess, for a while. What are they, about 3 months also? Or how?
No, like a month.
A month,
like,
okay.
Yeah.
And now, a word from our sponsor, the IBM Convention in Tacoma, Washington. The IBM Convention coming up in Tacoma, Washington is going to be on July the 10th through the 13th, and that's just right around the corner, folks. And I've got with me someone I'm really excited to introduce to you, and that is Mike Dunnigan, who is the international president-elect, so he's going to be the next one up in line. Hello, Mike. How are you doing?
Hey, Scott. I'm great. How are you today?
I am fantastic. So what's going to be happening? Are things, you getting excited?
I am so excited. This is going to be, I know I'm kind of the last of two or three people you've had on to talk about the convention. So I get to maybe sum it up here, but all I can say is it's going to be a fantastic convention. I will say there's still time. If someone is looking to find something to do that's going to be a memorable event for the rest of their life, in the next week or two, nothing will beat coming out to Tacoma and joining us for the convention. It's going to be a fantastic event.
It sounds like from everything we've talked with the other gentlemen in the past about all the talent and the hotel downtown and the restaurants that are nearby, Tacoma looks like it's just going to be a great convention city.
The Pacific Northwest has to be one of the most gorgeous geographic areas in the world. And I think that Tacoma as a city, it's a arts-based city. It's an exciting city, all kinds of great restaurants and theaters and so much to do even beyond the convention. That being said, I will say, if you're coming for the convention, plan on a busy 3 days or 4 days, I guess, because it is jam-packed from start to finish. I promise you, you will go home knowing that you've been at a great convention.
You've been going for a number of years, I know, to conventions. And what is it that you look forward to?
You know, it's funny that, of course, the talent lineup really, I believe, is potentially our best lineup ever. The schedule, Oscar and Stephen Levine and Chuck Arkin, our sitting president right now, worked so hard to put together a fantastic schedule of events. But honestly, what I think I enjoy most is just getting back together again with so many people I've met over the years that you get to know and meet all the new people. I mean, one of the great things about the International Brotherhood of Magicians is we continue to expand and continue to grow. And it's great seeing the old friends, but it's also just as much fun to meet a bunch of new friends every year as well. And I expect nothing to be different about Tacoma. It's going to be a true family reunion in the just about the real sense of the word.
Well, the convention is going to be coming up next week, actually. It begins on July the 10th, going through the 13th. And if people want to go and register right now, I was going to say register early. It's never too late.
Early.
Yeah. Go right now. Where can they go? What's the website?
Best place to go is the IBM website, www.magician.org. You can, from there, you'll see convention in the upper nav as a click button. Go to that. Make sure that you explore all the options under there. You'll find out everything about the convention, everything about the hotel, everything you need to know to come join us and have a great time.
Mike, thank you very much. Good luck in your coming year, too, and good luck with the convention.
Thank you, Scott. And hey, we appreciate all you do to support the IBM, and please keep it up.
You bet. I love the organization. I love what the IBM has done. It really is a brotherhood of magicians. And so thank you guys for all you do as well.
Well, we appreciate it and look forward to talking to you again.
See you in Tacoma. Thank you, Mike. And now back to our conversation with Benjamin Barnes. And then the other one that you mentioned.
Dennis Watkins at the Magic.
Oh, Dennis. Yeah, Dennis has been doing that show there at the Palmer House, correct, for a long time.
Yeah, but he just moved to the Goodman. But I mean, he's been around for like 12 to 15 years, something.
He's kind of like a Steve Cohen of Chicago, I guess, isn't he?
He's a Dennis Watkins of Chicago, but I understand, like, similar in the vein. Because yeah. Steve Cohen would kill you if he heard you say that.
he would. He probably is going to listen to this. I've known Dennis since he was a little kid and in Texas. But and I've chatted with him several times. But yeah, I did. He has a one-man show in a hotel. And like some of, you know, Ben Jackson has one in Houston that is doing just great guns. And of course, obviously, Steve Cohen, just as you know, got received the Special Performing Fellowship at the Academy of Magical Arts when we were out there a couple weeks ago. It was pretty cool. To see that, yeah,
there's enough for everybody, because people, the only thing I don't like is when people try and take your concept and replicate it.
That
I have a problem with. But people, as long as you're doing your own thing, turns out there's room for everybody.
Chicago,
especially a big city like Chicago,
right? That's what I was about to say. Chicago has always had a long time reputation of having really great magicians and a lot of bars and and venues where magicians can work, because they, I think, we're the last bastion of where people can go to actually have live nightclub shows. As it kind of faded from, I don't think even New York has as many as what Chicago has.
Right.
So it is amazing, all the venues that you guys have got. I remember that David Parr worked for a long time then with BJ Murphy. With the Magic Parlor, was it? Or what was
Magic Parlor. Yeah, they worked at the Greenhouse Theater in Lincoln Park here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And if people like your show, people will go see it, and then they'll come see our show. And
because they're so different, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's great. No, I never felt any sense of competition. Like I said, as long as people are doing their own thing,
yes,
it's all good.
Have you changed your methodology in how that you book talent for the lounge than you did when you were at Magic Chicago?
The only thing I've had to change is, because we're open 7 nights a week,
mm-hmm.
and the thing about the Magic Lounge, and this is to Joey's credit, when I was doing Magic Chicago, you had to be a very good magician to get in that show.
Mm-hmm.
That was not where a place where people came to work on their craft. You had to be pretty established. Joey, in the beginning, would just let people come in and work. And they weren't super great in the beginning, but because they had this place where they could work on this different form of an audience, they became really, really good.
Yep.
And so now the Chicago Magic Lounge, the magicians here are pretty good. And when I came into the mix here, my goal was to get people in Chicago who were good to get to a point where they could then find work in other places. You know, a lot of the original magicians who started on tables at the Magic Lounge are now doing cruise ships, mm-hmm. you know, the colleges, corporate events. And the idea was always to bring in a new group of people. And so what I do now is I look at people who aren't the most seasoned, but who can get there. You know, we take a gamble. We try to make predictions about people. And we invite those people into our world. And there's a training program that was set up to get people up to speed just enough to where they could work tables on slow nights.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this whole process where we go from tables on slow nights to where some of these people can now do everything. So the thing that's different now is we have to cultivate people. Because the mm-hmm. amount of work that we have to offer, there's not enough magicians for it. Chicago, for as many venues as there are, the number of magicians capable of doing professional work in Chicago is really small.
Really?
And it's getting smaller every day because people are getting older and dying. But so now we actively cultivate people who we think can grow into it. And we've done that a few times.
That's a good idea, and I certainly understand that. Again, going back to the Magic Island and my experience, Scott Hollingsworth did the same kind of thing, in which there were a lot of people who were just getting started for the first time, and now are big names, Chip Romero being the first one that comes to mind, in which he was coming down there and, you know, worked and did all this kind of stuff and bought some illusions and, of course, went on to fame with cruise ships and everything else that he does, and John Chirac and Oscar Munoz and Fred Becker. I mean, it goes on and on. I mean, but there has to be a place where people can kind of, I mean, not be bad, but at least have a place to try out some things then too.
Yeah. And we bring them into the work in a way that they don't lose. You know, we set people up for success and then gradually more so.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But it would seem to me, like what you were talking about, like it might bring some people in on a slow night. Now, you're talking about people, I would think, who would be in and around the Chicago area. You're not going to have somebody who is sending you a videotape from a clip from their show in California and then stopping by. So, again, you're getting some video from people, I'm sure, from all over the world. Is there something that you're looking for? Do you need to see their whole act? I mean, I know when I talk to Jack Goldfinger, that's what he says. I want to see the whole act. I don't want to see just like a sizzle reel or anything.
Yeah, you can't go off a sizzle reel because anybody can get a great sizzle reel. Sure. What you need to see, for me, honestly, people who have their act together and are really polished, when they walk out and say hello to the audience, I can really almost tell just with hello.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely helps to see the act, especially if you have no knowledge of them.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm looking for is something that's not typical, not run of the mill. And part of the reason for that is if you're doing a routine with a Rubik's Cube or a Magic Square or linking rings or whatever,
mm-hmm.
For you to come to Chicago to work at the Magic Lounge, we have to put you up in a hotel. We have to arrange ground transportation. We won't do that for someone who's that run of the mill when we have people in Chicago who already do that same stuff.
Sure.
So we need, you don't have to be completely original. You know, you don't have to be Robert Houdin or, you know, David Copperfield.
Yeah.
But there has to be something about you that we don't have here in terms of presentation, style, choice of material, something. And then are you entertaining? Do we think you would be entertaining for our audience?
Mm-hmm.
That's huge. You know, our audience is lay people. You know, they don't care if you fool them, or we don't care if you fool magicians, or if you have an act that would be great at FISM. As a matter of fact, people who work just for lay people tend to be the route that we are most interested in.
Yeah.
So real performers, you know, are real people perform for a lay audience and are good at doing that. Those are the ones who we're really interested in. People can entertain. And that's really it.
That's what I have been advised by other people when you go to perform at these clubs, the Castle or the Lounge or wherever, is that you should do your regular act. Don't try don't try to fool magicians or come up with something really creative, because that's not your audience. Your audience has exactly been what you said. It's the non-magicians.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So if you're good when you're at home performing for whomever you perform for and they're not magicians, chances are you'd be good here.
Yeah.
And as long as there's something that differentiates you from the horde, you have a good chance. One thing we do here, and we're working on this consciously more and more, is non-standard plots and routines. We all have a great ambitious card routine. Mm-hmm. But if you work in a place, any place where there's other magicians, it would work for you to stay as far away from classics as possible, because then you end up having to cut material. I love classic routines. I love Divernon. You know, I spent my whole college career learning all this Divernon material.
Yeah.
But I have to really go out of my way to find material that's off the beaten path, because when other magicians come into town, lots of people have a cups and balls routine, mm-hmm. or, you know, lots of people now have Rubik's Cube routines, or so you have to try and do something really, really different. And that will help you get booked here too.
Yeah, there are things that are classics, obviously, and you need to be able to do those classics as well. But there are also a lot of things that are undiscovered diamonds in a lot of books and lecture notes and things that people just don't see very often that will fool the heck out of you. It's like, well, wait a minute, where'd that come from? Well, that was from the 1928 book by Merling Hall or somebody. Yep. Holy cow.
So those are the tricks to bring with you. And the classic routines, like you say, you should do them. And I think you should perform them, just not at a place where there's six other magicians working with you, because there's probably more than two people with a card and wallet.
So that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Same way that other guy did the same thing over here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's terrible.
One other thing, too, I'm curious about is you have the Chicago Magic Roundtable, which has kind of taken on a new life, as I understand it.
Yeah.
When it used to be years ago, when Jay Marshall and others were involved with all that, back from the 1920s on to the 50s and early 60s, I guess. But it's been revived, resuscitated, and it's well and alive and living at the Magic Lounge. Can you tell me something about what is this and some of its history?
Yeah. Well, the Chicago Magic Roundtable, as you mentioned, goes way, way back. There's that famous piece of artwork by Salvatore Sala with all of the members. Mm-hmm. And I encourage all of the members of the roundtable to learn who all those people are, because it makes a big difference once you do. But yeah, we've just, you know, Joey, and again, this is to his credit, he wanted to build a community of magicians. And so the roundtable is made up of magicians of varying levels. Some people just really like magic. You know, some people don't even really do magic wear in the roundtable. All the people performing here are members, but we have members from all over the world. And it's run by Luis Carrion, who I think you probably have met.
I know him quite well.
Yeah, but he's in charge of it, all the programming, and it's amazing. The programs he comes up with, we have lectures, social events, games, all this. And, you know, if you're a member of the roundtable, you can come in, you can get seating if it's available. If we have an empty seat, you get it, it's yours. You can take advantage of the library. We have this amazing library here that at one point was the combined library of Walter Gibson and Maurice Raymond, the great Raymond. So that library has a great story. But the magician members can open the cabinets, which are typically locked, and read books that in a lot of cases long out of print. And you get to hang out with magicians and just be a part of the community. And again, then there's those events that Lewis plans. And when we have special events, you get the first grab at tickets, but it's really just an opportunity to be a part of this community. All of the programming, a lot of the programming is archived. So no matter where you live, you can access the talks and the interviews via an app that Roundtable members have. And yeah, it's amazing. It's a great thing.
That's what I was going to ask you about when you said this is available for people all over the world. I assume they must have Zoom meetings or something or events?
No, we don't do Zoom meetings, but we have the most common type of event we have are these Q&As. Magicians who are performing here will be interviewed mm-hmm. by someone. It's usually Lewis, but they're all recorded. And the people who have been interviewed, you know, Jade, Jericho, if I know, did one, yeah. Jan. But I mean, the list is long. I mean, it's hours and hours and hours of recordings. And you can go through the app and you can see all of it.
Are they just Q&As with the person, just kind of someone like me talking to you right now?
Yeah, but usually there's some element of performance. Oh. And I will tell you something, Scott. People in these Q&As reveal things you've never read or heard about mm-hmm. anywhere. And every Q&A we've had, especially since the pandemic, the subject ends up like completely breaking down in tears because they're telling you everything. And so they're very revelatory. And yeah, it's a great group. It's a great group.
Wow. That sounds interesting. And those are available then for people who belong to the Chicago yeah. Magic. So with the roundtable, how do you join that if people are interested in learning, getting more material on that?
Yeah, you can go to our website, chicagomagiclounge.com. There's a tab that says roundtable. Click on it. All the directions are there. And we don't... if you love magic, I think there's like a brief questionnaire. You're going to get it. You're going to get it. Yes. So we want people to join and to be as active as they can be.
And so is there a different price for, like the castle has, people from out of town versus locals?
You know, honestly, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a question for Lewis. I have no idea.
Yeah. Just curious about that then too. I know you are from Chicago originally. Is that right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I really like your coin work and card stuff. And I've seen you do it many times, like at the castle, as well as like on Masters of Illusion. Is there something that you prefer to do one over the other? I mean, you like strolling and close up better?
You know, I like strolling and close up better only because I've been doing it so long. Mm-hmm. It's second nature.
Natural to you, sure.
Yeah, it's just because I've had, you know, been doing it since 1998. I am doing more stand up now, and I like that less because it's horrifying, and I'm figuring things out as I go along. But I was just telling Paige Thompson, who you know, we did a corporate event in Wisconsin on Monday. And, you know, I was doing cocktail hour. Paige was going to do the stand-up show for an hour, but she said, get up and do like 20 minutes. So I did. And it's like, it was horrifying, but that she's like, that means you need to do it. So I got up and did it and went okay. And, you know, some I'm going more that route too.
So now that you've kind of broken the ice, you feel more comfortable about getting a chance to go do it more often?
Yeah, I feel like I can do it. It won't be great for a while, but I'll just keep doing it, and eventually I'll get there.
You know, advice that I used to give people was that whenever I was getting started and was just a little bit nervous in performing for audiences, I would do it for friends and family, right? Because they love you, or, you know, they're going to be nice to you. So that was great, you know, whatever. Yeah. And even though they may be not telling you the truth. But the point is that more and more people who will be attending your show will be more non-friends or people you don't know, but you know, you still have friends who are in there. And it's just that I always felt comfortable because I always knew at least there was one person who was in there. And I remember one particular night, I was doing a big show and I mean, it was Zigzag and Doves and everything then as well. And there were two people who were friends of mine that I saw during the cocktail hour. And then after dinner, I was doing the show and the lights were out and everything. And afterwards, I couldn't find them. And I saw them later that week. And I said, how'd you like the show? I said, oh, we had to get home and get to see the babysitter. And it's like, you weren't there for the show. And it just gripped me to think, I did a, what I think was a great show. I got great applause and, you know, everything. And I didn't have to have a friend who was in the audience.
Yeah.
So to me, it was a way of freeing myself. It's like, well, I guess they do like me. I don't need to have that. So a little at a time, I let go of having friends and family in the audience until I felt comfortable with that.
Yeah. So I will carry that with me. Yeah. Cause I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep doing it. So I did the parlor at the Magic Castle in March. Mm-hmm. And that was great. That was so fun.
Do you prefer the parlor over the close-up gallery?
Yes. Just because the space is bigger.
Yep.
So everything else gets to be bigger. I know people kill in the close-up. And I love the close-up gallery. I've done a close-up gallery maybe 13 times.
Yep.
And I just did the parlor for the first time. But I loved the parlor. You know, just being able to move and, you know, but hopefully when I go back to the castle, I want to go back to the close up because I have some stuff I've been thinking about a long time that I would like to do.
Well, some of the things you're working on, are those things that you have put your own Ben Barnes spin on, like a classic or something, or are the ideas that you've come up on your own?
It's both. It's both. You know, there's a couple of things I've come up with that I've been, the nice thing about Fool Us is they don't want you to do material that's not yours.
Mm-hmm.
So all the ideas I had in my little notebook that were just ideas that were collecting dust, being on Fool Us the last few times forced me to really try and make those into something. And I did. So I have material, and now as time goes along, I was telling a friend of mine, a very well-known magician from Las Vegas, went on a rant to me this past weekend about the virtues of originality. And so I'm working on more and more stuff that's my own. And I want to do some of it at the castle. And but Fool Us, almost everything I did on Fool Us, I was on Fool Us 3 times.
Uh-huh.
Two of the 3 times, it was my own stuff. So,
what was your experience like in working with Penn and Teller on there? I mean, I assume the first time it was pretty scary. And then the second time it's kind of like, well, I've already been here. I kind of got the lay of the land. And third time might have been easier or not. They all still made you nervous or what?
No. The first time, the smart thing I did is I had help. So I had Danny, Orleans, and Jan. They were kind of like my performance coaches. So I would go in there with them, work on my routine, and they would direct it. And we did that a lot. So by the time I went to Vegas the first time, what was a little nerve-wracking about that first time is you walk into the Penn & Teller Theater and you see the production and the scale of the production, and it just hits you how serious this is. You know, it looks like fun on TV, but this is serious.
Yeah.
And so that kind of, you know, and when I walked onto their stage for the first time, I just couldn't believe what was going on. Now, the first 2 times, it was during COVID. So there was no audience.
I was about to ask you about that. Okay.
Yeah, there was no audience. And that mirrored the experience I had working with Danny and Jan in their home, performing for an empty room. So that was okay. The first time it was nerve-wracking, but it wasn't as bad as it could have been if I had not worked with Danny and Jan. Penn and Teller, when you're performing, the entire time they're looking at iPads.
Yes.
They never really look at you. You see the top of their heads and they're watching performance. They're not looking at you at all.
Because of the cameras that are being...
Yep. There's cameras and all these different camera angles.
Angles, you can
see above, the sides, the front. So they're watching because they really want to bust you.
Yeah.
So they're being... They never once looked at me. I just talked to the red light on the top of the camera the first time. The second time is when I fooled them. And... But it was the same situation. But the second time felt different because that's the enormity of the production. I knew what I was walking into. So I felt comfortable with that situation. Mm-hmm. The last time, there's an audience full of people. And that was like, you know, you walk onto the Penn & Teller stage and there's this audience. I'd never been on a stage like that before, a theater like that. You know, you have to become Penn and Teller to get to a stage like that.
Yeah.
Or David Copperfield, you know. So to walk out to that was like, whoa. It was unbelievable, but it was fun. It was fun. And they had a new host, Brooke Burke, who's the current host.
Right.
And she was fun. And at this point, everyone who works on the show, I've known those people for years now. So it was, they made me very comfortable. And
did you fool them on that third time?
Nope. I should have stopped it the second time.
Stopped after the second
one. I should
have known. What was that like, though? I would think it would be kind of intimidating without any kind of an audience because you're not getting any feedback, particularly if you're, of course, you're kind of performing for that red light out there, but out of the corner of your eye, you're seeing them look down, just kind of, you're seeing the tops of their heads, and then you're not getting the feedback as far as in the audience. Or did they have a some sort of a laugh track or audience applause? Nothing. Nothing. So it was just an empty hall.
Silence.
Wow.
But that's where the work with Danny and Jan paid off.
Yeah.
Because when I was working with Danny and Jan, I rehearsed reactions. Mm-hmm. So I rehearsed pauses. So as soon as they said go, I just clicked back into the mode that I had when I was working with Danny and Jan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that prepared me so much.
And that is completely different from the Masters of Illusion, because there you're just performing and you're not having to feel as if that you're competing for a prize or something.
Yeah.
You're just trying to win over the audience. You're not trying to win a trophy.
Yeah. Well, I would tell you with Fool Us, I never once thought I would fool Penn and Teller. You know, Teller is a genius.
Mm-hmm. You
know?
Yeah.
I don't expect to fool Teller, you know, not at all. but yeah, Masters of Illusion was completely different. But again, that came after being on Penn and Teller at least once. So I felt a little more comfortable. And I had a lot of friends there. I saw you there, and Alexandra was there, and Anna Rose, all these people I knew, which made it a little easier.
Feel a little bit easier. Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. On a completely different direction, before we start to wrap up over here, I remember some years ago when Max Maven had put out a trick called Manhattan Transfer, and you were the one who was involved with that.
Yeah.
So you've known Max for a long time. How did you come to be associated with him on that one?
Well, my relationship with Max began almost 25 years ago, something like that. I was a student of Eugene Berger's. I started studying with Eugene when I was 19.
Mm-hmm.
And me and Eugene, there came a point when we were together, me, Eugene, and David Kovac, almost every night. And so when Max would come to town, I was just there. And the very first time I worked the Magic Castle, Max hired me. He was the first person to bring me to the Magic Castle. But I just got to know Max really well from those days in the late 90s and early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And then when I started working the castle, I would always have lunches and dinners. And the very first person I booked to headline the Chicago Magic Lounge was Max Maven.
Nice.
So when Max started working on this project, he just called people he wanted to help him with it. And I got that call. And that's how I became involved with that.
Yeah. Well, I wondered about that. I mean, I like the trick. And during COVID, I'd used that several times, or sometimes whenever I'm in a Zoom meeting and or like a club meeting and they're having magicians doing something online, that's one that I had done. It's a great trick.
Yeah. And you know, Max, he just had all that in his head ready to go. You know, from all the stuff he did on TV. So.
Well, I gathered there was something that was a connection with Eugene Berger, because I gathered also that you had probably been around Eugene for a while. You just answered that. You've been with him, studied under him since you were 19.
Yeah.
That had to be quite an experience to spend that much time with a master like Eugene.
Yeah, because he teaches you the stuff that Eugene taught me. He taught me magic tricks and techniques, but Eugene taught me how to live life.
Wow.
He taught me how to live my life. And I, very close friends of mine, I tell them in my day-to-day life, I am channeling three people. I'm channeling my father, Jack Goldfinger, who is a very close friend, and Eugene. Wow. Everything I do is informed by the lessons those three people taught me. Mm-hmm. And Eugene taught me so much. And the magic tricks are just like the beginning of it. He taught me how to take all the things that are beautiful and good about magic and share them with people in such a way that they will be able to share it with people who come into their lives. You know, he was something. He was really a special person.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Jack, of course, just has so many things that experience. I'm just trying to say gems that he always drops. They're just diamonds everywhere he goes.
Yeah. Yeah. And but, you know, there's a Jack we all know, and there's a Jack nobody knows. Hmm. And the Jack that nobody knows, I get to know a little bit of that person.
That's pretty darn cool.
Yeah. I get to know a little bit of that person.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And after hanging out with Eugene, I'm sure the same thing there as well.
Yeah.
Say that you channeled those three gentlemen, including your father. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, speaking of life experiences and everything, let me wrap up by just asking you then, my podcast is called The Magic Word, and it's always like to know, what is it that's your philosophy of life? What is it that you live by when you, doesn't have to be a word, just a phrase or philosophy?
Well, the philosophy, very simply, is that life for me, like for you and everybody else, is going to end one day.
Mm-hmm.
So make it so that the things that you love continue in your absence. That's my philosophy. And everything that I do is pushing for that. You know, when I'm gone, things continue. Yeah.
And people will remember you for developing that.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't even care if people remember me, because here's the thing, Scott, nobody will. There's going to come a point where no one does. I think of Alexander Herman all the time.
Mm-hmm.
When he was alive, the greatest magician of his day, no magicians, with very few exceptions, remember anything that this man did.
Mm.
Nobody. What he did, though, is he inspired people who came after him to keep doing this magic thing. He kept it going through inspiration. But no magician, people know he had the funny mustache. He walked around with the coin palmed and he did a couple of those. No one can tell you what that man's show was. But yet, without him, a lot of stuff wouldn't have happened. You know, a lot of people wouldn't have kept that momentum going, that magic going. So keep I don't care if people remember me. I don't care at all. I just care that I'm effective in keeping this going, because eventually no one's going to remember me, and that's fine. But I care that magic still exists. I care that it's thriving in Chicago after I'm gone.
Mm-hmm. And the passion continues in other people's lives who will enjoy it. Perfectly. Yep. Well said. Ben, thanks very much.
Thank you, Scott.
I appreciate you being my guest here this evening. And also, for all the advice you've given, I think it's pretty interesting. I know a lot of people who are perhaps wanting to work the Magic Lounge. On a good or a bad note, you might be getting even more people who will be contacting you soon.
I need people, so please send those videos.
Yeah, so there you go. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Benjamin Barnes. This is Scotty out. Thank you, Ben, for being my guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast. I enjoyed having a chance to chat with you, and I'm sure the listeners got a lot out of that, too. And for you listeners who might be interested, be sure to contact Ben. It sounds like he's looking for new acts all the time. So get in touch with him, and perhaps you might be the person he's looking for to work there, the Chicago Magic Lounge. I also want to thank the International Brotherhood of Magicians for sponsoring this particular episode, and want to encourage everybody to go and sign up and attend the convention in Tacoma. It starts next week, July the 10th, and goes through the 13th. I think I mentioned a time or two on this that I'll see you in Tacoma, just so that way that we're clear. I won't be personally seeing you in Tacoma. I hope to hear from people how good the convention is going to be after it's over, but I am not going to be able to make it there this year. I've got some other commitments, but I know it's going to be a great convention. So I will not see you at Tacoma, but I will see you down the road. In fact, I will be seeing you at Abbott's Get Together, followed by Magic Live. Those are the next couple of conventions I've got that will be coming up. But between then and now, we've got some more interesting guests who are going to be here over the next couple of weeks. And in fact, the person who's going to be talking with us next week is going to be offering us one of his books as part of a contest we'll be having. So we'll have a couple prizes. And if you are a subscriber to
the pod letter, then you'll be among the first to know about it and to sign up for it. If you haven't signed up for the pod letter, go to the Magic Word Podcast. There should be a little pop-up that will say, join our pod letter subscription list, and just please join us. The pod letter is my way of letting you know who's going to be on from week to week, and also giving you some suggestions from the archives. So this way, if you've missed something in the past, or there's some way that you have not been able to listen to an older one, because iTunes only goes back for the last 100, and I think Spotify may also now go back to the last 100 or 200, but with over 800 out there in the archives, you can go to our archives and listen to any of them that you want. But I can also make some suggestions. Anyhow, going a little bit long, just please do that. Please subscribe to our pod letter. And if you've got a little bit of time, I would greatly appreciate it if you can give us a 5-star rating on whatever platform you listen to your podcast. If it's iTunes, that's great. And if you can give us then also just some sort of a nice comment, that would be appreciated too. By the way, one more thing that might be of interest to some of you who like watching these podcasts as opposed to just listening to them. From time to time, I do post videos when I do Zoom conversations with my guests. This particular week with Benjamin Barnes, I did record on video, and it's available on YouTube. And I now am posting some of these videos on Spotify. So if you're a Spotify premium user, I understand that you can watch the videos there. So if you want to not just listen, but to watch the videos, check that out on Spotify then as well on Spotify Premium. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and make it so that everything you do is the best that you can do so that magic continues. This is Scotty out.